Solitaire Rose Novelcast, After the Fall, Episode 3. Those of you who have been with us for a while, this is the third episode of the zombie novel After the Fall and contains the end of the first chapter. For those of you who are new to this, Solitaire Rose Novelcast is what it sounds like. I take novels that I've written, I've turned them into podcasts, lasting about a half hour each, and then when I get done with each novel, it'll be collected as an audiobook, and the book itself will be on sale on Amazon as an ebook. We're starting the third part, so if this is the first time you're listening, you should go back and listen to parts 1 and 2 before going here. And now, part 3 of After the Fall, Chapter 1. The next morning, the alarm went off way too soon. And while Susan bounced out of bed to make coffee, he wanted to just lie there for the rest of the day. But when she came back in with a cup for him and reminded him that he had guard duty from 8 until noon, he reluctantly sat up on the side of the bed. Susan was sitting in the small chair they had in the bedroom, and he sipped the coffee and looked at her. Not just the way he would glance at her most of the time, but really looked at her, seeing how her eyes would go to the window whenever he would try to look in her eyes, and how she would run her finger around the rim of her own coffee mug as she talked about her plans for the day. He didn't pay a lot of attention to them, as he was still lost in thought. Guard duty, then home to tend the garden, 10 yards by 10 yards, since he was an officer, then a night of reading or talking with her, unless she would invite friends over for a game of cards. He laughed out loud when he thought of that. Less than 1 mile away was an enclave of the living dead who would eat them alive, and they would play bridge behind a wall guarded by horny soldiers. "What's funny, love?" she said, looking at him with her semi-vacant look she gave him way too damn often. "Nothing," he said, not wishing to get into the conversation with her. "I was just wondering if Dan gave the person who relieved him as much shit as he gave me." She smiled, still looking confused, and he wondered how he was going to get through the day. He wondered that for the next 2 days as he fell back into the routine of work, home, and work again. He woke up one night from a dream that he had become his dad, working in a factory until he was old and worn out at 50, unable to enjoy the retirement he had worked so hard for because his body had just been pushed too far. He stayed awake the rest of that night, wondering which reality he would rather have been in. He would meet with the CO once a week, and in the days leading up to his meeting this time, he started to practice what he would ask. He cared about Susan, and liked that he was safe and secure with a roof over his head and a gun by his side, but the commanding officer had the most impressive building, proving that some things simply didn't ever change. The building was meticulously maintained and had its own security fence that could be shut from the inside in case the zombies got through the main fences. Inside were most of the spare weapons, files upon files of information that no one gave a damn about anymore, and soldiers in full battle uniform as guards. The CO was Bradley Larson, who'd been a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and made sure people know that he was once stationed in the White House. He'd been sent here when martial law was declared to make sure that the soldiers here would follow orders without question. In the 5 years since the fall, Ray kept thinking Bradley would eventually set himself up as a ruler in and of himself, but he never did. He still acted as if the president was in charge and that he was simply awaiting orders. Must have been why the people here respected him so much. The inner office was down a long hallway filled with posters from World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, and the two Gulf Wars, talking about duty and honor and patriotism. The outer office had two armed guards and a male secretary who had saved the CO from a zombie attack soon after the CO was stationed here. It had not been one of the better moments of the base. The dead from recent battles against both the zombies and some of the citizens. He shook his head and put that out of his mind. Better not to think about that part of it. Had been put in underground bunkers, but no one knew much how the dead returned to life. Some of the scientists were watching the corpses to see how they reanimated, but they didn't have enough protection. Now there weren't any more scientists. After that, they burned the dead, and the scientists were pretty much either pressed into military service or put outside, which is why there were no more scientists. All but the last madman, who stayed below ground and claimed it was all the vice president's fault. No one cared if he was alive or a zombie down in the secured bunker. The secretary, an older man who'd aged at least 20 years in the last 5, nodded when Ray came into the office and went into the inner office. He came out and said quietly, "He'll see you now." Ray walked into the office and saw that Bradley was dressed, as he usually was, in a dress uniform, perfectly fitted and decorated profusely. "Sit down, Colonel," Bradley said. It was always odd to hear that, since no one else ever referred to him by his rank. Outside the office, the only thing rank meant was where you slept and how easy it was to get out of the more disgusting tasks of the base. "How's my niece doing?" "Very well, sir," Ray said, sitting ramrod straight. Even if he didn't much care for this life now, he gave all due respect to the CO for keeping the base so safe that a person could afford to get bored. "That's not what I want to talk to you about this week." "That sounds serious, Colonel. Are you having trouble with some of the men?" "Not at all, sir." He stopped, gathering his nerve. Now was the time to decide. He could say what he had been thinking about, or he could give a brief report and go back to his beautiful blonde girlfriend, who was politically connected, and their safe, secure life. All this and more went through his mind in the second before he spoke again. As he had done so many times in the span of that brief pause, he made the decision and forged ahead. "I would like to speak freely, sir." "Granted. These reports are worthless if we do not speak freely." "I agree, sir. I would like to propose a special detail for myself. As you well know, communications with the other bases fell apart 5 years ago, and in the past couple of years we've only gotten sporadic and confusing messages when we fire up the communications equipment. However, I have noticed that the enemy is less active and less numerous. It is my proposal that we send out a long-term reconnaissance mission to attempt to re-establish communications with the other bases that may be able to help us." Bradley scowled, and Ray wondered if he'd overstepped his bounds so far that he would be looking at living in the barracks again. "Are you trying to tell me that you think I should send away a group of my soldiers to try and get word to other bases?" "No, sir. I'm volunteering to go to a nearby base to see if there is anyone there. I want to see if we could start moving forward on putting America back together." The last part was the part he thought would clinch it. The CO was the only person who ever used the word America anymore. Not even Susan would say America. She would say here, or the base, or our home. But not America. Bradley looked him up and down, and Ray thought he was being scrutinized. He had known that there were some people in the past who'd asked to go to other bases. It was usually people who'd been causing trouble, or had been picked out by other soldiers as a target for whatever scapegoats were picked out for. Most of them had been put outside and called deserters. However, they had not asked to be reassigned or to try and find survivors. Everyone seemed to forget that there were other survivors when they sealed the doors, but the CO decided that they would only take care of military personnel and their families. "I can't spare any men," Bradley finally said, flatly. "I wouldn't need anyone, sir," Ray said, hurrying to make his point. "I could go to the closest base in 7 days, and then be back in 7 days. Sooner if they have equipment and communication. The enemy has been dropping off in numbers, so I would be able to make 20 miles a day, getting me to the base outside Memphis within 6 days. Do you want to die, son?" "Excuse me?" The CO leaned back in his chair, gazing off into space and talking, not really to him, but in general. "The world outside our gates is chaos. The dead have risen. They eat the living. Eat them, for mercy's sake. The bastard terrorists didn't even do that, and they were a bunch of fucking savages. I understand that this isn't the best of all possible assignments, but this is all we have left. That talk about us waiting it out until the country gets back on its feet is bullshit to keep the men from going nuts. The best we can do is get to a point where we can keep the gates open most of the time, and people can start moving out of the base. But I don't think that's going to happen in my lifetime. This is our world, Colonel. The fence is the boundary, the houses are our castles, and the men in the barracks are the underclass. We don't tell the underclass what is going on in the world because it is our duty to keep them away from the hard truths. On top of that, you'd be alone. How would you be safe at night? How would you know if one of the enemy was coming up on you? Without sleep, you won't last long, and with sleep, your zombie chow." Bradley opened the bottom drawer of his desk, pulled out a bottle and 2 glasses. He poured the dark liquid that was the whiskey made by some of the men in defiance of orders, and offered Ray a glass. Ray drank it, and it was smoother than the stuff he had been able to get from the bootleggers. He saw Bradley drink his glass dry in one gulp before starting again, this time staring him dead in the eyes. "I know you're getting restless. I would be too. The problem is there's really no place to go. The other bases are either overrun or doing what we are. Surviving. The Commander-in-Chief gave us very specific orders in case we lost communications. Set up self-sufficient communities and wait it out. I know it's hard when your world is a couple of square miles in Reveille, but that's the deck we were dealt. Request denied." The look in Bradley's eyes let him know that the discussion was over. Ray took the hint and changed the subject to his weekly report of men's supplies and work rosters. He went through all the normal duties of his rank without once betraying that he had made his decision to leave before even entering the office, but wanted a chance to do it officially. The next week, he went about his duties without anyone being able to tell what he was planning. Susan asked why he was away from the house more than usual. He told her he was trying to get ahead on some of the cleaning and storage duties in order to have more free time during the holidays. One night he lay in bed after she'd fallen asleep and wanted to change his mind. After all, if the CO was right, he should be happy that he was doing so well. He was one of the elite. He had a mate, he had rank, he had one of the houses. He was one of the chosen ones, one of the people with power. If he left, all that would be gone. He'd never be able to return. Deserters are put outside. He'd never see Susan again. That was the one thing that almost changed his mind. He'd never see her face again. They didn't have photographs anymore. A waste of chemicals and electricity. Her voice would fade into his memory, and the way she walked would be something he would faintly remember as he'd seen once in a movie. Her way of making fun of their meals without seeming ungrateful, gone. She'd have a new man in her house within a month. There were too many people who would vie for that privilege, and maybe with the next one, she would figure out that she had power over them, and make them her toy, as most of the other women of the base had done to their men. She stirred slightly then, moaning slightly in her sleep. She was having another erotic dream, and when she did wake up, they would have hard, fast, passionate sex, half awake and filled with lust. He thought about that too, even though it shouldn't be the single thing to keep him here. He would probably go a very long time, forever, without meeting another person, let alone a woman as attractive as Susan, or one who loved him as simply and easily. The next day on guard duty, it solidified. It was a night shift, just the early portion of the night, though, from 8 p.m. to midnight, when most of the base was still active, but people stayed away from the wall. The ground on the base was covered in gravel near the wall, but outside it looked like the rest of Arkansas, short scrub grass and a few trees, but not enough that they could be used for cover. The night was darker than normal, with heavy cloud cover during the day, so they had let the people on guard duty carry flashlights. Batteries were a precious resource since recharging them used the electricity generated by the solar panels, which was usually used for the mess hall. The people who worked on ammo, or the huge spotlights that were mounted on turrets around the camp. He heard something off in the distance about halfway through his shift, and when the sound didn't go away, he shone his flashlight into the darkness. He used it to scan the ground and saw them. 5 zombies coming up slowly, stumbling as they walked toward the base. It was hard to make them out, but they were about 500 yards away. He drew his weapon and waited. Protocol was not to alert the turrets until they were within 100 yards, partly to make sure that the base was their destination, and partly so as to get a good shot at them and not waste ammo. It was possible to get a decent headshot at 500 yards with a sniper rifle, but it wasn't worth the time. The guns also woke people up, because they knew if guns went off, there would be another group coming soon, drawn by the noise. They wanted to draw all the nearby zombies. "Bring them in so we can kill them," was their reasoning. That way they were less likely to be surprised by a shambling mass of them. As they came closer, he saw that it was 2 men and 3 women. Their clothing wasn't torn, which meant they had been freshly turned. They looked fairly young, maybe in their 30s when they died. The men were leading the way with the women behind, and they weren't making any sound other than their footsteps. None of the moaning he remembered from the other zombies had come from near the base. At around 200 yards, he shone his flashlight at the nearest tower, and then at the zombies again. A spotlight hit them, and they didn't change their motion toward the base at all. That part always disturbed him. If a deer or rabbit was suddenly hit with a bright light, they would either take off as fast as they could or freeze, staring into the light. Zombies didn't. They just kept moving forward. At around 150 yards, he heard the 2 men in the turret shout, "We've got 'em. Get ready to back us up if we miss." He barely heard them, mesmerized by the fact that they were five people who'd survived this long, probably using one of the zombie-proof basements the hucksters were selling as the fall was going on, and now they were just dead. All the hopes they'd have of lasting until help came were gone, and they had turned. Somehow they didn't even get a chance to pull a bullet in each other's brains to keep them from turning. He was overcome with the thought that that was the fate waiting for all of them. Death, a bullet, or that. There had to be something more. Waiting in a cage like lab rats was no sort of life for a human being. They got close enough and shots rang out. They dropped like puppets whose strings had been cut, and the spotlight shone on them a short time longer, making sure they wouldn't be getting up again. "Log the location and set up a crew for tomorrow, Colonel," someone shouted from the tower. Ray turned off his flashlight and quickly walked over to the guard station. He noted the information by grid where they fell, number of zombies, and time. He then went back to his patrol. The rest of his shift, he thought about how they would all turn into those things eventually. There had to be more than just being happy in a cage, getting fed, and having your waste taken away. No more of the dead showed up that night or the next day. He took it as a good sign. Maybe they were finally thinning out. There couldn't be an endless supply of people dying and coming back, so eventually the zombies would die out as well, right? It was a line of thought that he pursued during his quiet times as he walked the fence or sat at home when he looked like he was reading a book. For the next week, he put together his pack. A regulation army backpack with a map, compass, MREs, ammo, and the other things he would have taken if he was going to be dropped into enemy territory. He didn't tell a single soul of his plans. And if Susan knew what he was planning, she didn't mention it. A week after he'd seen the zombies, he gave his report to the CO quickly and without emotion. If Bradley had any questions about what Ray had talked about the week before, he made no mention of it. He had most of the day to himself. So he spent it making a nice meal for Susan, letting her talk about the things she was interested in without interrupting or distracting her, and then making sure she went to sleep happy and content. He signed himself up for guard duty on one of the darker quadrants from midnight to 4 a.m., so he was able to get a few hours of dreamless sleep before the alarm woke him up an hour before he was due at his station. He left her a note he'd written a few nights before on guard duty, and kissed her while she slept, making sure to turn off the alarm so that she wouldn't wake up when he was due home. His pack was in the hall closet, and he tested it out. It was heavy, but not as bad as he thought it was. All the military training and calisthenics had kept him in good enough shape that he'd be able to get the 20 miles a day he'd told the CO about in their meeting before he'd be too tired from carrying it. Not that he worried about that. He had no idea how far he'd get every day, just like he had no idea what he was looking for. He just wanted to get away and see if there was anything else. When he got to his post, Jen was there, one of the few female soldiers. She'd been in the military before the fall and had kept her rank rather than shed her uniform to be one of the typical base women. She was a colonel as well, but it was because of her commitment to duty and not because of who she slept with, like Ray. Then again, she did sleep with a lot of the other officers, not for power, but simply because she could. She was about Ray's size, a solid woman who kept herself in excellent shape so as not to be considered behind the men in terms of strength. She didn't talk to a lot of other people either, and Ray couldn't think of a time they'd had a conversation that lasted more than 10 minutes in all the time they'd been on the base. She gave him the once-over and said, "Is there a reason you have your pack with you? Got to sleep in the doghouse after your shift?" "Nope," he said, trying to be casual. "I have a lot to take care of that I didn't get time to. Gun maintenance, studying for the upcoming officers' exams, and the like. It's been quiet lately, so I could do it between patrols." "Hell of a lot of stuff for a 4-hour shift." "Yeah, that depends on what I have time for. That and Dan is the person relieving me," he said, going over what he'd practiced. She gave a short, derisive laugh. "I hear you. The last time he was to relieve me, he showed up 3 hours late, and I sent him home and said he'd have to take my shift the next day. There's a reason he's still a fucking private." "Damn Skippy," he said, putting his pack in the guard station, an 8-foot by 8-foot building by the fence. She gave his pack another look, and he knew she wasn't buying his story. But she wasn't going to push it any further. Her expression confused him, since it was a mix of pity and confusion. "If you get sick of studying after you're done on shift..." She paused, and he was finally able to understand her expression. Embarrassment. "Well, you know where I am. I could help you with some of the regulations, if..." "Well, if..." She paused and almost looked embarrassed. "You know." He nodded and watched as she walked away, wondering, not for the first time, if he would be able to stay. When she was out of sight, he ran his first patrol of the fence, making sure the fence was secure, then making sure there was nothing outside of it to be concerned about. The moon hadn't risen yet. When it did, it would be a mere crescent, so the night was darker than most. He could still detect movement with his night vision binoculars. Nothing. Another quiet night, where he normally would be able to just worry about staying awake. For the first hour of his shift, he stayed in the guardhouse, making sure the rifle and two sidearms were well-oiled and in perfect working order. He did the standard check every 20 minutes. But during the last check, he turned his goggles to the nearest guard tower to make sure he wasn't being observed. After his last check, he went into the guardhouse, slung his pack over his shoulder, and went to the backside of the small building. It was a small blind spot, putting the building between the tower and the fence. Checking again with his goggles and making sure he wasn't able to be observed, he pulled out a pair of wire cutters. Working quickly and pausing after each cut, he cut through a portion of the fence just big enough to squeeze himself through. He shoved the backpack through and then checked again, making sure the tower didn't see him. Nothing. No movement. No sound. No sign he'd been spotted. With that, he pulled himself through the opening and lay down on the ground, holding his breath and waiting to the count of 50, since if he had been spotted, they would have sounded an alarm by then. When he was sure the coast was clear, he pulled a length of wire from his pack and twisted around the portions of the fence he had cut apart, fixing the fence. He wanted to leave, not leave the base open and vulnerable. He wasn't mad at anyone. He didn't want revenge on anyone. He just couldn't take being locked up anymore. Even if you're in a prison of your own choice, it's still a prison. Human beings have spread all over the earth. Human beings had spread all over the earth before they became prey instead of predators, and it's not like people went to the Arctic just because they were forced to. Humans, before they built houses and stores and buildings and daily commutes, were nomads. It's in our bones and our blood, and he could feel his bones and blood wanting to be free. He moved quickly in getting the fence repaired, years of experience guiding his hands as he wound the wire around and through, almost as if he was stitching it back together. When he finished, he paused again, not waiting this time, but making sure he was doing the right thing. It would take less than 3 minutes to back out, to go back through the fence, seal it up, go back to his life. He would do another patrol in 10 minutes, then quietly go home in 3 hours, sleep in a soft bed next to a woman who loved him, and forget he ever did this. He thought about the pet rat he had had as a child. He kept it in a cage on the dresser, cleaned its cage, fed it, cleaned out the cage every week. He took care of all its needs, but after a year he took it outside and set it free, where a neighborhood cat or some other animal probably killed it. When his parents asked him why, he said that he didn't like having an animal that didn't want to stay with him. If it had to be in a cage, it was a prisoner, not a pet. He didn't want to end up as a rat in a cage. Maybe it was going to be the death of him, but he had to be free. Maybe there was a better life outside the base, maybe there wasn't, but he had to know. Furthermore, he had to try. Ray moved slowly across the ground, making sure not to move fast enough to attract attention from the tower, till he reached a tree line. When he was sure he was under the cover of the forest, he stood up, slung his pack over his shoulder, and started walking north. That's the end of chapter one. In 2 weeks, we will begin chapter two. For those of you who've been listening, I want to thank you. For those of you who are new to the episode because of all the publicity we're getting around, I want to thank you as well. Remember that this is an experiment. It's something new. It's very different from the other podcasts I do. I would like it if you would send me suggestions, reviews, comments, etc. And you can do that by emailing me at corey.strode@gmail.com. You can also discuss it on Facebook. Become a fan of Solitaire Rose Novelcast. All podcasts need sponsors, and this one has them as well. This podcast, and all the other podcasts that we have on the Solitaire Rose Network, has sponsors. And our sponsors are, first, as always, our beloved DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best web host in the whole known universe. You need a website. Come on, you know you need a website. If you're going to set up a store, if you're going to start writing, if you're going to start drawing, if you're going to start creating, if you're going to start selling, you need a website. So go to DreamHost.com, use the code CRAZY, and get $20 off your first year. We have a new sponsor. That sponsor is Flaviar, F-L-A-V-I-A-R. IAR. Just go to the Solitaire Rose podcast website at crazycomics.solitairerose.com, where we're inviting you to join. It's a discovery service for spirits aficionados. You gain access to fine spirits at members-only prices. And if you use our link, you get a $10 credit when you join. Finally, if you're listening to this podcast, you are a good-looking person. And as a good-looking person, you cannot trust your skin to just any old razor. That's why we invite you to shave with the amazing razors from Dollar Shave Club. Every month, they send a box with your shave options at the beginning of the week. Pop in a fresh blade, get that fresh blade shave. It feels fantastic. It's just one of the many ways that I maintain my good looks and you can maintain your good looks. So join us at the Dollar Shave Club. Their plans start at $3 a month and they have a money back guarantee. So if you want to join, just go to www.dollarshaveclub.com/crazy. We love feedback. So if you'd like to give us feedback, you can send us an email at corey.strode@gmail.com, or you can call our voice line at 952-856-0519. Send us an email, drop us a message. We'll put you on the air. We'll answer your question. We love to interact with our fans. We've also got Facebook pages for the Solitaire Rose podcast, for the Crazy Comics and Stories podcast, and the upcoming Solitaire Rose Novelcast. So go to Facebook, be our friend. We love friends. If you would like to advertise on Crazy Comics and Stories, Solitaire Rose Radio, or the upcoming Solitaire Rose Novelcast, you can just send an email to corey.strode@gmail.com, subject advertising. Thanks. Once again, I want to thank you for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We do this every 2 weeks on Thursday. Although I may get it up early, go ahead and subscribe on Stitcher, iTunes, any other thing you use to subscribe to podcasts, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with the next part.